Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, welcome to the Joe Scarborough Podcast. If you ever watch Morning Joe, you know we talk about baseball way too much, at least way too much for Mika. But Mika's not here. Mika's not here right now. And I've got to tell you, I'm feeling a little vulnerable. I'm feeling a little vulnerable because the freaking Red Sox just blew a three-game series with the Yankees in Fenway. They only needed to win one of three to basically put – the damned Yankees away. They couldn't do it. They lost just colossal collapses on Saturday night and then again on Sunday night. And so there is no joy in Mudville right now. Six games left for the Sox and the Yankees to figure out who's going to make it to the playoffs. And to help us out to walk through that last painful week, let's bring in the mayor of Fenway, Mike Barnicle, a guy who's known and loved by all there. Also, New York Daily News sports columnist. And, you know, I don't know if he's a Yankees fan or a Red Sox fan. I don't think he can admit to being a Red Sox fan writing for a New York paper. So we'll just say sports columnist, legendary writer, Mike Lupica. And also with us, because, I mean, if you want to talk about Major League Baseball, who has better insights than the Associated Press's White House reporter, Jonathan Lemire? Good to have you guys with us. Let's talk about the hellish weekend that was. As a Boston Red Sox fan, I've always understood that Red Sox fans do not define their fandom by the successes that they've had, the World Series that they've won, 04, 07, 13. It's always... it's the bleak moments. It takes me back to Congress when we actually had a NATO general testifying about the Bosnian War, the Balkans War, and said that one side remembered what the other side did in the 14th century. Well, you talk to any Red Sox fan, and they'll talk to you about where they were when Bucky Dent hit his home run, where they were in 2003 when we completely blew that. And I suspect for a few years at least, Mike Barnicle, there are going to be quite a few Red Sox fans that are going to be remembering this sweep of this past weekend if, in fact, we're kept out of the playoffs.
Kids. They were all children. They're not used to this. I'm pulling seniority here today in this group. I've seen the worst. I've seen the best. But it's a funny thing. I mean, covering Bosnia was better than living with the Red Sox over the last 30 to 40 years. The idea, Joe, that Friday night, Bobby DiAngelo, who you know, who runs the greatest sports apparel store right across the street from Fenway Park, Twins Enterprises, sidles up next to me and begins talking about Bucky Dent.
Yeah, exactly. Now, people don't understand. I was talking to Esther Newberg. This was, I think, in 2013. We were watching the Red Sox about to win the World Series. She didn't want to talk about it. You know what she wanted to talk about? She wanted to talk about the priest that she was hiding behind as she saw Bucky Dent's home run start to go up and sail out of the stadium, defined again by the losses, defined by the hatred, defined by 78, defined by 2003, on and on and on, Mike.
Well, I mean, what does it say about the Red Sox fandom, or a large portion of the fandom, that Bobby D. Angelo and I, the other night, we went through the batting order. I remembered looking at Bob Beattie Bailey coming in to pinch hit I remembered, you know, Mike Torres walking around the mound aimlessly while Bucky Dent went and got a new bat after he broke his bat. And I am someone who cannot remember who called me at 9 o'clock this morning. And yet I remember vividly all of that.
And Mike Lupica, let's bring you in here, because if somebody asks me what the low point in sports history was, I go back, not to game six. Everybody goes back to game six. I'm an optimist. I talk about game seven in 1986, when Calvin Schiraldi started to make the walk toward the mound. I yelled, "Calvin fucking Schiraldi," so loud, repeatedly in Pensacola, Florida, that I thought the neighbors were going to call the Pensacola Police Department and send me to jail. I still can't watch any part of that series. And I still remember that woman behind home plate in Shea Stadium with her arms going in circles every time a Red Sox pitcher pitched in the entire series. I swear to God, I can't even talk about it.
Joe, so you're saying you really haven't taken the time in your busy schedule to watch the 30 for 30 Once Upon a Time in Queens about the 86 Mets.
Can I tell you where I am? Last night, when I knew the wheels were about to come off, do you know what I did? Ortiz was talking on ESPN and A-Rod was there. I started going back to the highlights from 2004, and I watched Game 4, watched Game 5, watched the Bloody Sock game, Game 6. I was trying to make the mojo positive. No luck there.
Okay, can I just say that to bring this trip down memory lane, this brutal trip down memory lane, back to the present. What's awful and great about a series like this, if you just look at how it unfolded, forget about Friday night. Okay. That's
8-3.
That was fine. But you look at how fragile those two eighth innings were. Okay. And it shows you what has happened as this bullpen of Alex Cora's has been deconstructed, and he made mistakes.
Yeah. But,
okay?
but hold on a second. This isn't Alex Cora's bullpen. Okay, this is the front office's bullpen. They decided after we won the World Series, that they were going to let their best two relievers go. And they never replaced them. Nobody figured out that we closed the series with a guy whose arm falls off every July 27th.
Okay, but
like, we had Sale. Sale was our closer? Really? We had nobody in 19. We had nobody in 20. We have nobody this year. Seriously, Mike Lupica, how could they have not gotten us a reliever at the deadline?
But even without a reliever at the deadline, guys, can I just pose it that Tanner Houck should be able to put away Brett Gardner on Saturday. Because if he can put away, I believe the count was at 1-2, was it not?
0-2. 0-2.
I'm sorry, Michael. I'm sorry. It was 0-2. So everything bad that happened started there, even with all the craziness of last night, okay? If he puts away Gardner, I'm not saying that Stanton might not have hit a home run in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
But what is happening in front of our eyes is there's so many elements to this. Ottavino is shot. Matt Barnes is shot. Whitlock is hurt. And guys, the idea that they're going to go through this last week, fine, because it's the Orioles and Nationals with that bullpen as it's constituted. You know who's their best relief pitcher right now? Ryan Brazier.
I love Brazier. Oh, my God, I'm going to kill myself. Let's bring in Jonathan Lemire. Hey, Lemire, we've been saying this all along. Everybody's been saying this all along. They should have done something at the trade deadline. They didn't. I will say, even last night, I'm going to do something I never do. I never do it. I always tell my kids, never blame a loss on a call, and I'm not blaming the loss on the call. But you do wonder how Joe effing West sees him catch the ball, and then when he's making the transfer to his hand to throw it back to the pitcher, he drops it, and next thing we know, it's a home run. I mean, seriously.
I don't believe he saw it. I don't believe he saw it.
And by the way, why did – I'm sorry. Help me out here. How did that go down, Lemire?
Yeah, no, it was an extraordinarily bad call, and it's not the only issue, but it was a foul tip. He got in the glove, he had it, he went to transfer it, he dropped it, and Judge got new life, and then a ringing double followed, and then you could hear a pin drop at Fenway, followed by the Stanton home run, his second gargantuan blast in as many nights.
Oh my God.
But yeah, look, Kyle Schwarber was an excellent addition at the deadline. He was, and he's been a useful piece, certainly in the lineup. He lengthened it. He's a professional hitter. He's been, for the most part, good. But that they came away from the deadline without pitching, other than two kind of very second-tier relievers who have done
second
just
tier?
As much harm as good.
Really? Second-tier? Seriously?
Tier?
What, are we at Harvard?
Fourth tier?
You're talking about great inflation?
Seventh-tier? Seventh-tier? But we saw it last night. And the bullpen, I mean, Garrett Richards, who literally admitted publicly he had to relearn to pitch after being unable to use sticky stuff, was thrust into a role where he had to be a vital seventh or eighth inning guy. And he was good at it for like three games. And now he fell apart last night too. And it was, there was something very 2003 about this weekend. Not just that they were gut-wrenching losses, but at how predictable they were. And in fact, Joe Scarborough, I texted you,
yes, you did,
30 seconds before Stanton's grand slam,
yes, you did,
and called it.
You know, Mike, what the Mike Barnicle, what I think the I won't say tragedy. I'm not going to be like I don't know, Nick Saban, who compared a loss to Southern Miss to 9/11. I'm not going to do that. But let's just say what's so sad for the players is that this team for half the season gutted it out and reminded all of us of the 2013 Red Sox. Just you know, playing beyond themselves every single day. And I just hate the fact that they continued trying to do that. And then after the trade deadline, it was like, I mean, just the air went out of the balloon.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm pretty sure I'm the outlier in this group, because I view what happened over the weekend simply as part of the beauty and the unpredictability, to a certain extent, of Major League Baseball. You cannot write anything, and it plays out the way you've written it. Unlike every other sport, you can play it out. You can put it down in writing for an NFL game or an NBA game. Even a National Hockey League game, what's going to occur. But you cannot do that with baseball. And that's the beauty of the sport. The other element involved in this is it raises all sorts of questions about the rules of Major League Baseball. On the Vasquez dropping the ball clearly on the transfer. So Judge is out. He has swung at a fastball on the outside corner of the plate. He is out. And Vasquez drops the ball on the transfer. The first base umpire might have had a shot at seeing that. Joe West is too fat and too old. He can't lean over. He didn't see it. But so that play is non-reviewable. So it begs the question, why have reviews at all? If a play as critical as that can't be reviewed.
Why would that not be reviewable?
And why did not Vasquez turn around and say to Joe West, Joe, you've got to ask the other umpires for a call on this because I dropped it on the transfer. Why did he not do that? No one knows, really. And he hasn't been asked that because you can't get in the clubhouse to ask players anything now. So it's the beauty of baseball that the first thing that strikes me, the unpredictability of baseball. And then, you know, their relief, they're coming out of the bullpen, their best bet is this week's schedule, Baltimore and Washington.
Yep. Yes.
So you just got to sit there and hang in for it. And again, that's the larger beauty of baseball because we will all be watching these games this week.
Hey, Mike, game out the inning last night. Okay. And again, that play, and West is too arrogant to ask for help. Okay, it's time for him to go. But forget all that. Okay, yeah, he made all the right calls 17 years ago. Good for him. But that was like a check swing. That all you have to do is look at either the first base umpire or the third base umpire, and they clearly saw. I don't even know why Vasquez was transferring the ball. Why he didn't hold on to it for to frame it the way guys often do. But what do you? They then walk Stant, right, and pitch to Gallo. Don't you think that's the way the inning plays out?
You know, the beauty, the magic of baseball, that inning nearly mimicked the eighth inning 24 hours earlier. Dalbec refuses to go to the rail twice in a row.
By the way, Mike, can somebody please teach that guy? I love Bobby D. But if a 12-year-old did that two games in a row in the playoffs, I would be screaming my head off saying, hey, Einstein, walk over, use your left hand or use your right hand, touch the rail,
find the wall,
keep your eye on the ball. Hey, you can do two things at once. He did it two nights in a row.
Same play, yeah.
After the Yankees had begged them to take the game because LeMahieu never misses that ball. And LeMahieu's wasn't bad because I don't know how hard the wind was blowing last night.
The wind wasn't blowing.
But Gallo, I can't remember the last time I've seen a play like Gallo. So they're begging the Red Sox to get one game, which after the first two nights you would have been thrilled to get. And the Red Sox said, no, we don't want this game.
Even the one game would just put the standings in such a different place right now. And the momentum would be so very different. And you're right, the schedule does the Red Sox a favor here, but these are no sure things. They have to go on the road. Our pitching has been very up and down. What also does help, though, is that the Yankees and Blue Jays now have to play for three games. And one of those teams, because Toronto is only one game back at this point. So that's the silver lining here, is that one of those teams is going to lose each of the next 3 days.
Mike Lupica, talking about the Yankees, help me out here really quickly. I mean, this is a team.
Yes, sir.
I've heard from Yankee fans throughout the year that this is the fattest, laziest, most out of shape Yankees team ever. They're the worst athletes in baseball. Everybody was ready to fire Boone in June, July. Then they just go on what did they win? 12, 13 in a row?
13 in a row, their longest winning streak in like 60 years, Joe.
13 in a row. Then they start losing again, and everybody's ready to throw Boone overboard. Now they've won six, they've won seven, and they've won six. They're on fire. It has been a team that has been up and down all year. Somehow they're still in the hunt. Somehow, even with the laziest, worst catcher in the history of Major League Baseball. And I don't have to be 115 years old to know that Gary Sanchez is the worst catcher in the history of Major League Baseball. And they're still in the hunt.
Yeah, Joe and Mike and Jonathan, here's the thing. In fact, I just this morning wrote a column about this for MLB.com, okay? This is all they could have ever hoped for after the last few years out of Stanton and Judge. Okay, this is what they hoped they would be if you could keep them on the field, okay? Stanton, the last 2 years, missed 181 regular season games, okay? Judge, over the last three seasons, missed 142. He's played 142 this year. Stanton's played 133. Their slash lines are almost the same. They're going to end up with mid-30s in home runs, 100 RBI. And, you know, they have gotten hot, even though Judge wasn't great this weekend, they've gotten hot at the same time. And it makes that the middle of that lineup, you know, ferocious again. But they could just as easily start striking out and hitting into double plays. That's been the maddening part of watching the Yankees this year.
Barnacle, what do you think?
Well, I tell you one thing, Joe. What I think is a point that you just referenced, Gary Sanchez. And this is sort of off topic, but it's not off topic, I don't think. That baseball broadcast that ESPN put on last night is one of the worst products ever imaginable, including Alex Rodriguez saying that Gary Sanchez is one of the best catchers in Major League Baseball. That's a direct quote. And the other aspect of it is you get Matt Vasgersian saying that Rafi Devers is having a breakout year. Does he know nothing, 2019? I mean, Rafi Devers, you know, he had over almost 200 hits. He had 90 extra base hits. He hit, I think, about 310. I mean, what are these guys doing in that booth? Watch the game. Learn about the game before you go and announce the game.
Devers is actually what a great player, but he's underperforming, just like JD's underperforming, just like a lot of the players.
He just missed that ball last night.
He really did.
He just missed that ball last night.
He did.
By the way, you know what they need, Michael Barnicle? You know what they need on ESPN for the Sunday night broadcast?
Blackout.
They need something like Peyton and Eli just sitting there actually talking in an intelligent, entertaining way about the game they're watching. Because, Mike, you're right. It's the worst broadcast on television. And Alex then in the postseason goes over to Fox and is part of the worst pre and post game show.
Yes.
The worst and dumbest I've ever seen on television.
I mean, can you imagine? I assume all of you are familiar with various broadcasts because we can watch all the games no matter where they played now. But the Mets broadcast booth I rank as one of the best one or two broadcast booths in Major League Baseball. Can you imagine if you had Gary from the Mets broadcast, Dennis Eckersley.
Oh, my God.
Ronnie Ron Darling. And Keith, Ronnie Darling, yeah.
And just talking baseball while we watch the game. We know what's happening. You don't have to tell me that he lined the ball foul down the left field line. I saw it on TV while I'm watching.
Just we don't need it, Mike. We don't need an autopsy on every pitch, which is what we get now. And Mike and Joe and Jonathan, that is why the Eli Peyton thing, I think, is reimagining what sports television is going to be like going forward, because it's just what we'd hope for. This would be like if we all got to do this in real time while the game was going on.
Yeah. Correct. You know what? I think I'll focus on sports television reimagined after the next six games are played. But I get your point. It is something. But I will say Eck is just as good as it gets. And he will tell you. I think one time this weekend said, who was it? I think it was Hunter was up, Hunter Renfro. And he said if he throws him a curveball, he's out. Threw him a curveball, he was out. That happens time and time again. Eck doesn't have to look at a pitch and tell you for 30 minutes about what happened, because he's telling you beforehand what's going to happen. It reminds me of Joe Morgan when Morgan was, you know, on Night and Day. He was extraordinary.
Yeah, and a little bit of Tony Romo does that in the NFL broadcasts now. No, Eckersley is about as good as it gets. His enthusiasm for the game, the colorful sayings, and the fact that he just knows it so well. But returning to the play on the field here, I mean, where does the help come from? I mean, what is the solution for getting those last three or four, getting through those last three or four innings of the game? I mean, Chris Sale, has he been good since he's come back? Yes, he has. But he's also pitched against a string of soft lineups, and he's not going more than five innings a game. Evaldi, look, clunker Friday night aside, has been good. But we've seen Rodriguez have a couple of good starts in a row, a couple of bad starts in a row. Hawks in the bullpen now, and, you know, to mixed results this weekend. It is no sure thing that they win enough games this week to get in. And even if they do, and obviously, look, that's first and foremost, we'll be glad if they do, but they're now probably staring at one game being played in the Bronx or potentially even in Toronto, and that won't be – that's a tall order.
Hey, guys, I had switched over to watch Mr. Aaron Rodgers do Aaron Rodgers-like things. Is it true that Hansel Robles pitched through a 1-2-3 inning through the middle of the Yankee batting order? Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like he got hit by lightning, right, Michael? I mean,
well, that's, you know, some days you want him to get hit by a cab before on his way to the ballpark. Oh, but, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, that's what you end up with, Hansel Robles. I mean, there were several, we talked about this earlier. I mean, there were several premier relievers available at the deadline. And
all right, who's the closer? Okay, Thursday night. Okay, they've won the first two games. Okay,
Whitlock.
When does he get back?
Is he back by Thursday?
Is he healthy enough to pitch now?
They'll bring him back.
Okay, so he's the closer. And guys, just real quick, what happened to Matt Barnes? COVID. I get all that. Okay, what happened to him?
And he broke down mentally and physically. Yeah. He just—you could tell—he's no confidence in the mound. He doesn't believe in any of his stuff, and they don't have any confidence in him either. He's barely pitched. He's come back, and when he's yet to see a high leverage situation.
Barnicle, how did that happen? What happened? How did he lose it
so
badly?
He was an all-star,
and got a contract extension.
He was an all-star, but you know, the mind is a mysterious thing. So he comes back after the All-Star break. He has like an epic front half, as everyone knows. He's on the All-Star team. He comes back. He gets touched up the first couple of outings after the All-Star break. And then something happened to him mentally on this. And you can – one of the things you can do with like a Barnes, a Matt Barnes, is take a look at the time in between pitches.
Oh, my God.
From when he was when he was an All-Star in June and July and from the middle of August to the end of August.
And, like, he just looks
twice as much
up
time.
There.
It's like, he's clearly overthinking
it. He's taking too long. It's like, come on, man. Pitch the ball. And sometimes it's the same thing with Pivetta, where when Pivetta's on, man, he just gets up there and pitches. And when he loses it, man, he loses it.
Yeah, you know, the sabermetricians and all these Ivy League kids in the front office who the closest they've ever come to a game is a Sony TV set prior to going to work for a major league team, most of them. They forget – Dennis Eckersley could tell you this. Get the ball, throw the ball. That's the key to pitching. Get the ball, throw the ball. Don't give that batter up at the plate time to think about what might be coming. Get the ball, throw the ball.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap this up but with some predictions. Lupica, did the Sox make it in? Is it the Sox and the Yankees playing in the Bronx for the wild card?
I think it will be Chris Sale against Gerrit Cole on whatever it is, October 5th or 6th at Yankee Stadium. And I think they're going to make it because
what a good
the Blue Jays, Joe, the Blue Jays are weird, okay? And the Red Sox do get a break because the Yankees and the Blue Jays are playing each other. And let's just hope in the spirit of Dennis Eckersley, the Red Sox don't look like a pair of shoes this week.
Yeah. What do you think, Jonathan Lemire?
I think it's a coin flip. I think they need to win. They have to win at least four this week, and maybe it's five. I guess I'll say that they do that. They squeak in an agonizing fashion, but then, yes, have to go to the Bronx because of those two blown eighth innings this weekend.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think, Barnicle?
I think the Blue Jays are the biggest threat to the Red Sox, even though they're not playing them for a week. Because I think the Blue Jays, in a sense, are the best team out there among the three teams we're talking about. I do think that the Red Sox, the schedule saves them. They make the playoffs, and they play at Fenway, by the way, because they won the season series against the Yankees. That game will be at Fenway Park Tuesday, October 5th, not Yankee Stadium.
So you think we'll catch them?
I do, given the schedule.
Okay, so you think they're going to end up tied? Mike, you think they're going to end up tied record-wise?
I think the Yankees are going to have a tough time with Toronto.
And then here's the question, guys, before we go. And I wanted to ask you all this, okay? How hard – if the Rays think they have a chance to knock the Yankees out, I think they'll play like hell at Yankee Stadium. I do.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
They'll rest a couple pitchers maybe on the Sunday, just the last game, but otherwise they go for it. They don't want the Yankees.
Right. Okay.
Agreed. All right. Very good. Thank you so much, Mike Barnicle, Mike Lupica, and Jonathan Lemire. This is painful. Well, that'll do it for me for now. Thanks so much for tuning into the Joe Scarborough podcast. As always, I greatly appreciate you listening. Looking forward to talking to you soon.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.